Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. I thought that today, before we talked about the Bullies to Buddies workbook, I would set a little groundwork for some of the things that I've seen happening in regard to cyberbullying. We're at the chapter in the book that Izzy teaches us how to handle cyberbullying. And I think it's important that we understand that once you write something down, post it on your phone, on the internet, on your pad, on your notebook, whatever it is you're using today, it's there forever. It's something that you really, really can't take back in every sense of the word. This past year, we talked about the young girl who was pursued relentlessly by some classmates. And the mom got involved, moved the girl to a different school after many conversations with school officials and trying to intervene in a way to protect her child. Now, we've talked about that as well in the Bullies book. We've talked about the fact that sometimes parents intervening, school officials intervening, certainly police and what have you intervening is not the right idea all the time, because then things escalate to a much higher level and then a lot more people get angry with each other. And recently, I've watched that happen on Facebook. I've watched some stories evolve on Facebook. Some people I know face-to-face. Some people I just know from Facebook. And yet one comment out of 30 can send everybody on a tirade, saying things that they can't take back, saying things that I really think that they don't mean. It's terrible. Part of it is amusingly funny, especially if it doesn't hurt anybody, but I can't believe how quickly it snowballs out of control. The one teenager that we talked about who moved to a different school, mom thought everything was all right. She obviously quit talking to mom about what was happening to her because probably because she felt like poor mom was going crazy trying to figure out what to do for her, and nothing really helped. So she left her out of the whole equation until the day that she climbed on top of a building and threw herself off the building. Now, as much as I hate to start a morning with bad stuff, the family of that young woman have to live with that the rest of their lives. And the two girls got in a bit of trouble, but not a lot of trouble. Now, did they push her off the building? Metaphorically, they did. But did they really push her off the building? No. So there's not much that can be done to them. So you see, it opens up an arena of kind of unpunishable repercussions. It's really very scary when you think about it. So I'm going to read some of the book, but I want to talk about it. Let's bring Shelley in.
Good morning, Renee.
Good morning, honey. My computer is still... I pressed to let you in, and a survey popped up on my computer asking me to take a Blog Talk Radio survey.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Just what I wanted to do this morning, right?
Yep,
so
yep.
You remember the story I'm talking about, I'm sure. We talked about her, that young woman, two or three times. And
right. She
had actually texted a boy that, I don't know if you would call him her boyfriend or a friend boy, whatever the deal was. But she told him what she was going to do, and she did it. because she just couldn't stand any more harassment. It was a very, very sad story. You and I both got pretty wrapped up in it and realized that there were no quick fixes to that story, obviously, unless everybody took away, you know, cell phones and all of the technology that everybody possesses today. But even recently on Facebook, you know the story about Carrie and her baby.
Right.
That generated lots of empathy and some well-wishers and people who, you know, climbed on board and wanted to make a difference and felt the injustice of everything. But it also brought the dark side.
That's also right. Brought
people saying some really awful things, being very judgmental and very hurtful. And when I delved into some of the other sites that would pop up and kind of got a little bit deeper into some of the other posters, I realized that, I don't know, it's like an opportunity to unload, Shell. It's like an opportunity to feel mean and say whatever you want to say.
Well, it's a lack of personal responsibility, which we talk about all the time. You know, if you're putting something out on a blog and you're not standing in front of the person where they might be able to defend themselves and tell you that you're wrong, it really sets it. It makes it very free for you to literally say whatever you want to say, because what consequence are you going to suffer? There's nobody in front of you that's going to say anything. You can just be as careless as you want. But whenever you have that kind of freedom, it comes with greater responsibility, and that's what people don't understand. The greater privilege you're extended, the greater responsibility you have to do the right things with it. Just because you can do something, you have the ability to do it, doesn't mean you should. And that's where people lose themselves. And I think they do themselves as much of a disservice as they do to other people, because not only are you saying hurtful things, not only are you putting out negativity into the world, and there's already too much of it to begin with, so why add to it, all right? But on one hand, you're putting up negativity, which is possibly hurting another person, all right, because the people that read that, you don't know the whole story, you're just saying mean, spiteful things, it hurts them, okay? It's certainly not healing energy for them, but you're also diminishing yourself, because if anybody reads those and knows you, or it pops up somewhere and you're trying to get a job or you're trying to, you know, get involved with somebody, and then they read that you post these types of hateful things, it can actually impact how people view you. Who wants somebody who's just constantly ripping apart other people? So eventually it does catch up with you. So if you're not going to be more careful for other people, be more careful for how it could eventually impact you at some point.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we both know how much harm is done to the human mind, the human psyche, a whole body by negativity. I mean, negativity is probably the worst illness anybody can have, as far as I'm concerned. Because I wish I was artsy, you know, could really draw, because in my vision of negativity, I see somebody with dark spots and sores and bugs and everything crawling all over them. Isn't that awful? I have a vivid imagination when it comes to things like that, but that's how I think of negativity. Because it's harboring so much hatred.
Right. Well, I came across it. I had sent you some links. I don't know if you ever got it, because sometimes our computers don't cooperate with each other. But I recently came across this artist named Lindsay Sterling. She's just so talented. She's a violin player, but she does like dubstep and different types of high-energy electronic music. She's got a wonderful band that accompanies her. So her music is very upbeat. It's beautiful and upbeat at the same time because it is a violin and she plays it wonderfully, but it's very upbeat, fast-paced music. And she's adorable. And so I ordered one of her CDs. I was just entranced by her music. It's so beautiful and very, very unusual. And when I looked at the inside cover of the CD, she actually wrote down a little snippet from that, what I had seen on that movie, What the Bleep, where they talk about that the Japanese doctor who examined water and how our words could affect the structure of water. So listen to what she wrote here, because it goes to what we're saying. A Japanese doctor of alternative medicine, Dr. Masura Emoto, experimented with water and found that human vibrational energy, thoughts, words, ideas, and music dramatically, and music also, by the way, dramatically affected the molecular structure of water. For example, when words of kindness were spoken to the water, the crystallized patterns were beautiful and symmetrical. But when demeaning words were spoken to the water, the formations were random and jagged. She didn't say this here, but I will say I've seen it. They were very ugly and disturbing patterns that would form. They would also become darker in color, okay? When you would say words like love and kindness, the colors would be bright and beautiful. When you would say words like hate or murder, it would get almost like a murky, dark brown, almost like a muddy color, and become, like she said, random and jagged. So she continues.
What kind, wait one second, Shel. What kind of a body of water do they do this with? Do you know?
I don't know. He tested all kinds of water. But listen to how she continues.
Okay.
This is what Dr. Emoto said. Because we are made of 90% water, Dr. Emoto's findings have implications for mankind. The way we treat ourselves and others determines whether the water in our body makes beautiful patterned shapes or ugly random masses. We as people are dramatically affected by the surroundings we live in, the people we choose to be around, and most importantly, the thoughts that silently circulate throughout our minds. I love that statement. By being negative and thinking negative thoughts, we are causing meaningless patterns to form in our bodies. But when we feel, think, and say uplifting things and believe in ourselves, we literally create inner beauty. And this is on her first CD, just named Lindsay Sterling. It's on the inside cover of the CD packet. And I was so impressed that she put that there. She's a very, very sweet. She's kind of a goofy entertainer because I've seen her, you know, talking. She's got an adorable sense of humor. Extremely, extremely talented. I'm not trying to do a commercial for her, but I'm just very impressed with her music. It's very uplifting, very beautiful, but also very upbeat. You know, you can actually dance to her music. And her ideals on there, I was very surprised and very impressed to see that because I've talked about that study done by Dr. Emoto. And he did this for years, many different ways. But he would test different types of water, bottled water. He would get, you know, like water from a lake, all different kinds of water, and he would put it in bottles sometimes, and it shows it on What the Bleep. They showed some of his experiments. Sometimes he would just have someone say the word to the water, and then he would freeze it and test it. Or sometimes he would write a word on a piece of paper and tape it to the bottle, and he would get the same results. So our words, our written words and our spoken words, have absolute tremendous power to either cause harm or to be healing. And these studies that this Japanese doctor did were fascinating. And when you consider that, when you say these hateful words, that's why there's so much illness in the world. You cannot say destructive words and not harm yourself at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, I totally believe in the healing words of another. I also believe in touch. I'm not talking about studied touch such as quantum touch and things like that. At a meeting recently, I was asked, you know, how I help couples get back together. And I said, it all depends on what kind of couple you're talking about. If you're talking about a boyfriend and girlfriend who haven't really committed to each other and are having ups and downs, I tell them, you know, that they need to, first of all, get to know each other better. But if it's a couple that's been together, shared a domicile for years in some cases, and are struggling with their relationship, I dare them to hold each other's hands and look at each other and not be okay.
Right.
I dare them.
That's
because
right.
you truly cannot. I mean, there has to be a connection there. So it won't work with a young couple who's just getting to know each other, although I think it may help. But I've never done it with them, but I have done it with, I've done it with Spike and I, and I've done it with other couples that I could see just couldn't touch again, couldn't reach each other. Then when you talk about the waters, do you remember Fantasia, the movie Fantasia that came out, God, in the 50s?
Oh, yeah. That was when I was
Disney.
A kid.
That's
years
right.
Ago.
That's right. It was all about the I can't remember the orchestra, but one of the, you know, the big name orchestras that played music back in those days. And so many of the cartoons that came with this show were being affected by the music.
Right.
The water.
Remember that.
The water, the thunder and lightning in one of the scenes. Remember where Mickey was a wizard and the water got out of control in the castle? Do you remember
yep.
that part of the movie?
I have the movie, actually. I have it on VHS.
Yes.
I have
yes.
the movie.
I think we do, too. I think I got it for AJ, just because I think it teaches you that. Plus that, if you show that to a four-year-old, even though there's not a lot of silliness like there is on some of the shows that are on TV today, it mesmerizes them. But I remember thinking way back then that the music, you know, actually, I thought it was vibrational, not knowing too much about energy at that point in time in my life and understanding the effects of good words versus bad words and the energy of someone who's in a bad place and the energy of someone who's in a good place. I didn't even know about that. Not only didn't I understand it, it wasn't even in my head to think about. And then,
right.
Do you remember when they started doing, matter of fact, they did it at the Sunrise Flea Market. They put in a water fountain in the front of the stage. And had lights and music, and the water danced to the music.
Oh,
do you remember that? They synchronized
mm-hmm.
it so that, you know, it would either be beautifully, you know, the music would be slow and it would be very fluttery, the water and everything, or they would play something very, very demanding and almost angry music and watch the water throw itself back and forth and everything. That mesmerized
right.
me as well. So I get that, and I also, as unknowledgeable as I am about a lot of these scientific things, I think I kind of understand molecular structure. I think I kind of get the fact that the molecules are like alive, and they are affected by the energies around them. So all of that makes perfect sense to me. But the worst part is how it affects us human beings. Do you remember the test that we did at the Institute? Oh, God, what was it called? It was he had a computer. And do you remember the guy that we set up in the back of El Dorado? And he tested all of us and gave us these little bottles of water that he placed on top of this electronic equipment and charged the water with the things that we needed. Do you remember that? I don't even remember what we called it, but you know what I'm talking about.
Right.
And the whole idea was that he could change the structure of the water to treat the water in our bodies to bring us to a better place health-wise. He analyzed all of us, and without asking any questions of us, the thing that amazed me the most was he told me, after having me hooked up to all of his equipment and everything, he said, "You have lung problems," and I said, "Yes." He said, "But you're not a smoker," and I said, "Never." And he said, "And you have back problems?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Have you had something done to your back?" And I said, "Yes, I had back." I mean, it was amazing, the things that he could find out. I didn't put much stock in him because he was not a believable kind of guy.
I remember him.
Right, but there was still the things that he had learned. The problem was some of us fall into a place like that and so get it that we're the perfect teacher. Others of us get it, but, you know, it's not doing anything for us, so we're not the perfect teacher, and that's the way I felt about him. But there was a lot to be shown about words. Well, I remember the day that we talked about the brain scan on TV?
Mm-hmm.
When they showed the difference of somebody holding the hand of a loved one when they heard bad news and all that kind of stuff. I mean, so many things have proven these facts. But I think the worst part about what we're talking about today, which is the cyberbullying, is the ability. I mean, if you scream something at somebody, they can hear it again in their mind. We know that. They can do an instant replay, if you will, of your face all contorted, screaming something hateful at them. They can do that. But it rarely lasts forever. Written words that people can go back to, that's why we advise people to write letters to the people that they care about so that maybe they can come to an understanding about something that has formed a wall between them so that somebody can reread and reread and reread. Well, that works in a bad way as well.
Right, but we also recommend, which is something you and I have both done, to write a letter to somebody that has upset you and that you want to kind of clear the air with and hold it for 24 hours and reread it. Because sometimes act of writing the letter, you've released some of your anger, and you're going to reread the letter and you're going to say, okay, I don't want it to come across that angry or I don't mean mm-hmm. that anymore. And you're going to find that you're going to alter it. Maybe once or twice, maybe a couple of times, you know. But a lot of, because I've gone through that, where I've written a letter, gotten everything off my chest, and then a day later I read it, and just the act of venting on paper calmed me down enough where I wasn't quite that upset anymore, and I was able to put things in better perspective. So when I finally did give the letter to the person, it was toned down, and it was coming more from my heart than my head. And because sometimes you have this old knee-jerk reaction, which is from your head. You're not really dealing from who you really are, which is a loving, caring person. You know, we're taught to deal from our heads and not our hearts, and actually that's not the way we're supposed to live. We're supposed to live from our hearts, not our heads, because we can talk ourselves in and out of things by overthinking it, where when you have that initial knee-jerk reaction about something, that something is good or bad for you, that instinctual impulse is what's correct, because that's coming from your heart center, from your solar plexus. It's coming from what you're connected to, whether you say it's your soul or whatever, without getting too esoteric. Okay? But there is a part of us that's connected to something that's outside of us, okay? Most cultures call it a soul, but there's other names for it, okay? Well, that part of us is instinctual and will always guide you in the right direction, but we've been taught throughout our lives, incorrectly so, by the way, that you're not supposed to listen to that gut instinct, that you're supposed to rationalize things. But when we overthink, we muddy the waters, and we're not getting a clear impression anymore. So that's why I say you should always go from your heart, not your head, because your heart, your solar plexus, that part of you that's tapped into who we really are, you know, on a higher level, is the part of you that's always going to put you in the right place, because it's dealing from love and it's dealing from healing. If you're feeling hateful, if you're feeling resentful towards somebody, then you're tapping into something through your head, not through your heart, because there is no negative emotion in that area that's from our basis personality, which is all generated through creation and love.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the problem is that we become, like you just said, we think with our heads, which is very analytical. And we also have the tendency to want to always get even or to have the last word. And that works against us as well, because it never serves a purpose. And, of course, if we all feel the same way, it's never ending. So, but I love the way, Izzy breaks it down to, like, so a five-year-old can get it, you know, and he actually talks about the reasoning for why somebody does this, and they're very right on. He says, in recent years, kids have found another way to pick on each other, the internet and the cell phones. This is being called cyberbullying. It's natural to get upset when other kids write terrible things about you, either to you or about you, in emails, instant messages, and websites or blogs. Your parents may also get upset if they discover you are a victim of cyberbullying. Parents often want the school to handle the problem. Sometimes parents even get the police or the FBI involved. They would like society to protect you from everyone else over cyberspace. Unfortunately, as hard as they may try, they will never be able to protect you from everyone. And if you get the police or the FBI involved against other kids, they're likely to hate you forever and want to be even meaner to you. It would really be fantastic if you could live a life in which everyone was always nice to you. Unfortunately, no one is so lucky. You may have heard of a place in which everyone is always nice to each other. It's called heaven. But as long as you are alive, you are going to have to deal with people being mean. In fact, there is a good chance that the people who are the meanest to you are your own family members. And a very easy place for people to be mean to you is on the internet. So stop expecting everyone to be nice to you and learn what to do when people are mean. The sooner you learn how to do this, the better the rest of your life will be. You know, I can't even think at this particular moment of anything that's truer than that. Can you?
No, I mean, that's an excellent assessment and advice.
And it's sad. You know, I mean, if you really analyze the words I just said, it kind of hurts your feelings a little bit, but it's true. It's really, really true. Your parents would never give you a car and tell you to drive it, expecting the government to protect you from all the dangers on the road. You need to go through driver's education and then take tests proving that you are competent to drive. And then your parents have to pay a small fortune in insurance because there is still a chance that you will get into accidents despite all your driving education. Yet your parents give you cell phones and computers and let you use them without teaching you how to avoid the dangers that await you and what to do once something bad happens. So
wow.
I am giving you here rules to help you use cyberspace safely and deal with the dangers competently. There is a good chance that if you are being bullied over cyberspace, it is also happening to you in school. If so, it's a good idea to read the free online manual, How to Stop Being Teased and Bullied Without Really Trying, or the book we sell, Bullies to Buddies and How to Turn Your Enemies into Friends. It is really not hard to handle cyberbullying by yourself if you wish. All you need is to change your attitude. Use the following instructions, and it shouldn't be a problem. Number one is there's an old saying, if you play with fire, you can get burned. Most things in life have both good sides and bad sides. It's fun to play with fire, but it stops being fun if you get burned. So if you're not willing to risk getting burned, you shouldn't play with it. Basketball is fun, but you can fall, scrape your knees, and even break your bones. The great thing about the internet is that it has made communication possible like never before in the history of the world. The bad side is that it's easier to spread nasty things about people than ever before in our history. If you are not willing to face the possibility that kids will use the internet against you, you shouldn't get on it. Of course, kids can spread nasty things about you even if you never get on the internet, but it's much more likely to happen to you if you use it. So remember, if you insist on using the internet, be prepared that kids will use it against you, and don't get upset when it happens. Number two, he says, the real fun of spreading nasty things about you is to see you getting upset. If you respond by writing angry emails, the kids who wrote them will have a great time and want to do it even more. However, if it doesn't bother you, then the kids will not have as much fun and are more likely to leave you alone. Dealing with cyberbullying is similar to dealing with rumors. The magic response to rumors is, do you believe it? Like all the role-playing he did with us, you know, when I called the girl stinky and said I didn't want her sitting beside me and that she was, all these terrible things. And when she went to the teacher, who was Izzy, he said, do you believe it? Is it true? And she said, no. And he said, well, then, you know. So that is the most important thing you can say to anybody who comes with you with something hurtful. Is it true? And sometimes it is, you know. We have to touch on that a little bit. Sometimes it is true. And when it is true, and you can't do anything about it, like we've talked about a really large nose, or you're going through a spurt of acne, or any of those kind of things, work on it. Work on it, and or learn to live with it. I mean, Jimmy Durante made a fortune with a big nose. You know, so it can be...
Or Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, well, you know, and you read stories about her way back in the day when every agent she went to told her to do something about her nose, and she said, no, it's my nose, and I'm keeping it.
That's
so,
right.
it you know, it is about that. But if you believe it, then it hurts your feelings. If you believe your nose is big, but you think it suits your face, then you'll probably be okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'll probably be okay. You can't stop people from believing what they want to believe, you know.
Well, the whole thing is that throughout my life, I've met people that I felt that their features were not attractive. I don't ever say somebody's ugly, but I've met people and I thought their features weren't that attractive. And yet I could see that they felt they were very handsome or pretty. And so because they acted with that kind of self-confidence, it actually made me see them more attractive once I started talking to them than they might have appeared just looking at them across the room. I've also seen people that I noticed from a distance that appeared gorgeous to me. I mean, really super handsome guy or a beautiful, beautiful woman. And then when you start talking to them and you see this level of insecurity, and once you start talking to them and you see that, it actually diminishes their outward appearance. It's odd. It's like a person's opinion of themselves can actually influence other people to feel that way about them. So it's really, really important for people to be comfortable with who they are. Flaws and all, if you've got a scar, if you have a limp, if you've got scraggly hair or whatever your issues are, if you're too tall, too thin, you know, whatever your issue is, be okay with it, because you'll find that other people will be okay with it also. And even if somebody teases you because they don't know you, the more comfortable you are with whatever that thing is, like you said, it's no fun for somebody to tease you if there's no reaction on your part. If, you know, somebody says, oh, wow, you have such scraggly hair, and you say, yeah, so? You know, I say, oh, yeah, isn't this a pain in the ass? How would you like to have a head of hair like this? And you just kind of joke back with them, showing them that it doesn't bother you. It's, yeah, I got scraggly hair. What can I do about it, you know? And the more nonchalant and okay with it you are, it kind of diffuses the other person.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you can't stop them. You can't stop them from thinking whatever they want to think. You, in most cases, can't stop them from saying whatever they want to say. So from the get-go, it's an act of futility unless you handle it differently. I mean, you're not going to get any place by saying anything derogatory back. You know, it just turns into something else, and one thing leads to another, and the snowball effect is tremendous. So, I mean, I think that's what happened with the young girl that we were talking about. I think she actually started to believe that more than these two girls thought all this stuff about her, because
escalated into more and more hurtful stuff. So what could have been nipped in the bud, so to speak, ended up escalating to a point where her life actually became intolerable. And what a tragedy is that.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is certainly one of our saddest stories that we've ever told, I believe. You can't stop people from believing what they want to believe. People know that not everything that is written in emails and instant messages are true. Don't you recognize nonsense when you read it? Well, so do other kids. So you don't have to worry that they will believe the nasty things written about you. However, if you try to convince them not to believe the stuff that's going on around you, you look foolish and automatically lose. Mm. And you can be sure the nastiness will continue. The solution is to give people freedom of speech. Take the attitude, kids can say or write whatever they want about me, and it's perfectly okay. If kids tell you about the mean things they read about you, ask them, do you believe it? If they say no, you can say, good, and you win. If they say yes, you can believe it if you want to, and you win also. The kids will admire you for not letting anything bother you. It will be no fun to pick on you, so they will eventually leave you alone. I think that that's probably truer than true, mm-hmm. because it is about the reactions. It is about how much they think they can interfere in the flow of your life and see if they can hurt your feelings, make you angry, make you fight back. I mean, we've delved into this in so many different arenas. A lot of times it's because somebody's doing it to them, and it's a repercussion for them because they don't know how to handle it. But, you know, one of the most important things that I think Izzy teaches us is how to change the flow of the energy. And if you can picture that snowball coming down the side of the mountain, and you run up the mountain and stop it before it gets so big that it causes an avalanche, then you have made a big difference. And it's the same idea with rumors and mean talk and all the things that go with it. The minute you stop it, the minute you don't pass it on, the minute you don't give it any truth, it peters out. It just, you know, it just does. So that can be true for all of us, not just kids, obviously. And a little kid is going to have a little bit more trouble with it. Most of us, our lives are so full, we can't spend time worrying about the fact that somebody said, you know, did you see Renee's hair the other night? Oh my God, what was she thinking? Right? That's the least of my worries, what my hair looks like. So it is what it is, and it is what you make it. So if you can stop it, I mean, this is what he said throughout this whole book, right? Don't give it any credence. Don't, you know, if you get intimidated by it and fight back, then it looks like you believe it. And you're, you know, you're trying to think of excuses as to why it's not true, but everybody can tell you believe it too. So
Sometimes they don't believe the mean things they're saying to you. They're just saying them because they know they can get a reaction out of you.
Yeah, and so, they know that they're mean. Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's based in something about your outward appearance that they can pick on. Other times it's just to be jerks because they know they get you all riled up and it's entertaining to them.
Uh-huh. That's exactly it. And, you know, it can only affect you if you let it, purely and simply. And, you know, I've met some young people, and I've talked to them, and I've said, you know, are your feelings hurt about this? No, they're not. You're not mad? No, because it's not true. I mean, they've said that to me. So a lot mm-hmm. of people get it. You know, their personality is strong enough so that they just get it. And Shelley has always impressed me like that, because Shelley has always taken things that have been said to her with a grain of salt. Shelley does not march to the same drummer as a lot of other people. She just doesn't. So when she gets, and I've seen this happen to her, when she gets attacked, she went through a time when she was a little bit angry about things that had gone on in her life. But a lot of times the altercation that was taking place in the moment didn't have anything to do with the other stuff. And I watched her evolve through different things that she's done for herself, different things she's read, and she's actually brought herself to another place. But she always had the ability to see through the BS. That was hers from the get-go, I believe. And in most cases, she could look at somebody and laugh at them. So mm-hmm. I use Shelley as an example of how you really can, you know, get past all of that. And because people have hurt you, you get angry. And
what are the important things?
I think we all understand that.
Right, because you're using me as an example, is that one of the reasons it's been easier for me to actually act upon a lot of what Izzy talks about is because I always have had kind of a healthy self-esteem, even when I was younger. And it doesn't mean I didn't get hurt feelings and stuff like that. But But I dealt with it differently. Even when I was a little kid, I dealt with it differently than most other people because, quite simply, I was okay with me, all right? I'm a Leo, you know, anybody who gets into that, you know, so I have a very strong sense of self-worth. You know, I'm not conceited. I don't mean it that way. But I'm comfortable with who I am. That's probably the easiest way to put it. Now, my sister, raised by the same parents, was not okay with who she was. My sister had a lot of insecurities growing up, and she did not allow things to not affect her like things didn't affect me. If somebody said something mean to her, it would absolutely crush her because she didn't have a strong sense of being okay with who she was. And here we are in our 50s, and she's finally now, after all these decades, coming into a comfort with who she is. And she has gained more self-confidence in the past 2 years, more having a sense of being okay with herself than during the rest of our lives we knew each other. You know, I mean, we've talked about on the show before that my sister and I had a falling out. We were estranged for about a decade. And once we reconciled and started talking, I could see that she had gone through a real learning experience during that decade we were separated. And it kind of seasoned her a little bit. And then once we started dealing with each other again, she's returned more to the nice person she was, and at the same time, she's gained some self-confidence and some being okay with herself attitude. And I've noticed that things don't derail her anymore. People can say things to her, and she's just like, well, if that's, you know, you're entitled to your opinion, where even as close as 2 years ago, she would have been defending herself. No, that's not true. I don't know why you would say something like that about me. And now it's like, well, you're entitled to your opinion, but I don't agree with you. And, you know, and that's it. But, you know, she doesn't engage it anymore. So she stays in a state of being okay. So here you have two people raised by the same parents. And what I basically had a handle on, you know, by the time I was 20, took my sister till she was 50. So the point is that it's never too late, number one. But number two, if my sister had tried to engage these things when she was younger, she would have had a less stressful life. So it's never too late, but there's also no better time than today. So if you recognize that you're very, very sensitive, if you recognize that you just get devastated by what people say to you, start reading self-help books that are about that. There's a whole genre of books out there by authors like Deepak Chopra and Brendan Burchard, and they have wonderful books. Even Oprah has a whole series of books, and they talk about being okay with who you are and how to rise above when people are mean to you and not allow it, you know. So if you see that in yourself, start finding ways to be okay with who you are, because you'll notice that you'll have a much happier life.
Well, I think that all of us are on different journeys, and I do think that everybody grows up at a different point in time. There is not, I mean, you know, we go by numerical. You know, we're babies when we're born until we're like four, and then we're, you know, toddlers and preschoolers and all this. Everything's by a number, and the truth of the matter is our psyche does not run by numbers. It runs by almost like an evolution, if you will. We grow at our own speed, and we understand things at our own speed, and sometimes things don't even enter our head. Something that I might have thought about when I was 15, somebody else thought about when they were 4. So there is no rhyme or reason for how everybody develops and how they get where they're supposed to go, except for their own timesheet, their own life cycle. And it develops the way it's supposed to, I think. And maybe it's to get the certain lessons or to get the certain obstacles to build you into who you're supposed to be. I don't think it's a divine intervention. I just think it's it's life. And
proactively make it happen in your life. That's the point I'm making. The changes you've seen in me in the last few years, and you've known me for well over a decade now, almost 15 years now, all right, but the changes I've gone through in the last couple of years are more dramatic and in the decade past, and that's because of particular books I chose to read and some seminars I was going to. And my sister ended up reading these same books and going to these same seminars, and she went through an even more dramatic change than me because I was already kind of there. It just brought me deeper into being able to deal with situations on a more positive level and always staying in a good place and stuff like that. With my sister, it was a much more dramatic shift for her. But it was because of the same thing. So my point is that if you recognize these things about yourself, you can proactively choose to do things to get yourself to a better place by learning, by opening your mind and saying, okay, there has to be a better way because what I'm doing right now is making me sad all the time. I suffer, you know, and I don't want to suffer, so I'm going to try to figure out how to think differently so that I can feel better all the time and be in charge of how I react to people. And that's why I recommend these self-help books. And there's so many of them out there being uplifting. And go to well-known authors. You know, start with their books first, and then you can go to some of the more obscure stuff. But it really does change you when you start reading other people's stories. Jack Canfield's another one. He had a very, very rough childhood, and he writes about that. And he's so successful now, and he's such a happy person, but he grew up with a very violent alcoholic father who used to beat his mother all the time and attack him and stuff. You know, so he didn't have a happy childhood, but people meet him now, and he's a seminar leader, and he goes on all these talk shows and everything, and you'd think he never had a care in the world. And then you find out he had this really, really rough childhood, you know. And then to hear
you have to understand that no matter who it is, it has to be the right time. Everything you're saying is true, but you could have said that to you or to your sister 30 years ago, and they just said, yeah, you're right, and not done anything with it. That's my point. You're on a cycle, and I believe that information that you take in only makes a difference when you're ready to have it make a difference. And that's kind of what, you know, that's kind of what Izzy is saying about, you know, learning to understand that other people's information to you is not necessarily the change that you need to do. It is within you to figure out, you know, when you're going to change, when you're going to evolve to another level in your life. And we all are on different time clocks. I want to get to, we're already down to 11 minutes, and I kind of wanted to finish this chapter. But he's got sometimes humiliating thing that kids are posting about you are true, and everyone knows it, which is what we just talked about. Or it's easy for them to check it out and find out that it's true. What would you do then? Your natural reaction is to get angry and defensive, trying to deny it and prove that it's not true. You may even want to stop going to school altogether and avoid the humiliation. However, no one is going to respect you more for reacting this way, nor will they stop believing the posting. Other kids will respect you much more if you acknowledge the truth of the posting maturely, saying things like, yes, that's what I did, what happened to me was terrible, or I can't believe I was so stupid, what was I thinking? They will admire you for being brave enough to admit the humiliating matter is true. Eventually, kids will stop talking about it because they will be looking for new exciting stories to gossip about. So he's talking about not a physical thing, but something that you did. You remember the story about the girl that they put on the internet because she was attacked and somebody took pictures of it, and because she was all drunk and messed up and everything, and she looked like she was enjoying everything, but she claimed rape after the fact. This was a story of a few years ago. And they've made shows out on Law and Order, and all these different places have changed a few of the facts but done a show about it.
Right.
And she took her own life as well because she couldn't stand all the repercussions. So there's a perfect scenario. And I say this to every young person who spends time with me and talks to me. We all make mistakes, every one of us. And the most important person that can forgive you is you. Because as long as you don't forgive you, it's like you don't give anybody else the opportunity to forgive you. Because you don't care. All you're thinking about is what a jerk you were or how could you do something so stupid. And I hear this all the time, especially for some reason, women in their 30s. Women in their 30s, for some reason, have a, I don't know, because things aren't going the way they thought they would go by the time they're in their 30s or something. But I hear this all the time from women in that age bracket. You know, what was I thinking? Choices about men, choices about career, choices about behavior. Doesn't necessarily mean that they've done anything that everybody else hasn't done, but they beat themselves up more about it. And being able to say, yes, that was really stupid, and getting over it is the trick. That's the trick. I don't believe I did that. What was I thinking? Like he just said. And then getting over it. It's keeping it, you know, you have to forgive yourself before you can expect anybody else to forgive you. And that's what he's trying to explain here. And he also says don't try to get the kids in trouble for cyberbullying because of all the other things that he's talked about in the other chapters. It just makes everything so much bigger. And if people are making serious threats against you and you think they are actually planning to harm you, that's a different matter. Then you should tell your parents or the school or go to the police if necessary. But if you are reasonably sure they don't intend to carry out their threats, it's best not to pay attention to them. Okay, now that's a hard one, because is everybody really equipped to make that decision? I would worry about that. My advice would be to tell somebody, let somebody else enter into that equation with you. Wouldn't you say so, especially if you're like 13?
Well, I don't know, because I got threatened when I was 13, and I had, I mean, in my particular case, I could tell sometimes when it was just, you know, BS and they had no intention, or if it was somebody that I thought would really follow through. I had that ability when I was 13. So, you know, I mean,
but that doesn't mean everybody does. You know, that doesn't mean everybody does. That's my point. I know. I was an adult by the time I was 13 as well. Doesn't mean I didn't make mistakes, but I was pretty grown up at 13. But there are some kids that are not.
Well, let's put it this way. If talking to 13-year-old,
danger,
right?
You know.
But then the advice would be then if you're not sure if they're being honest or not, then tell somebody. But do so in a way like, look, I don't know if this person is serious or not. In other words, don't be dramatic about it. Don't say, oh my
right.
God, this person.
Yeah, that's
this,
fine.
You know,
yeah,
just
that, well,
level
yeah,
of,
you
of,
should exactly instead of going to everybody and saying, oh, my God, so-and-so said that they're going to, whatever. I can't even think of anything bad enough. But and you're really scared. You really have a fear of it because you think that they're not playing with a full deck or whatever the reason might be. Then I think you should tell somebody. And I think if you don't want to get parents and everything involved, there are hotlines everywhere now for kids to call, and I think that might be the perfect time to utilize that. Sometimes adults disguise who they are over the internet. So this is the
ooh,
deal where But they make believe they are kids in order to trick you into meeting with them. They may be looking to take advantage of you sexually or do some other bad thing to you. These people are very dangerous. Do not go to meet people who contacted you over the internet. And if you suspect an adult is trying to trick you, tell your parents right away. These people are criminals, and the police should be involved in tracking them down. Let me say this. As an old woman, I do a lot of stuff on the internet. I shop on Craigslist. I do all that kind of stuff. If people don't put a phone number and they just want you to contact them through a number or, there's on Craigslist, you've got the number that they put with it, don't do it. Don't do it. If somebody is afraid to put their phone number on the page, something's going on. You do have to be wise with this, and I don't care whether you're 13 or 113. This is a dangerous part of the internet. And if somebody calls you and you don't know the phone number and you don't know what they're talking about and says, I see you're looking for this, you could come to my office and meet me, I don't do that either. You do have to be smart with this because this can be a real predator's haven, the internet. So be smart with this. And I don't care, again, how old you are. I don't care. Because I am the biggest pushover when it comes to believing people most of the time. I think everybody works like I do and is honest. And they're not. So I've learned kind of that nothing terrible happened to me or anything, but I've learned the hard way that you have to be careful with things that you look at on the internet. I just helped somebody who almost got something stolen from them because he was believing everything everybody was telling him that he's never met before. So this is a dangerous place. Be smart about that. There's an old saying, bad publicity is better than no publicity. Have you ever stood in line at the supermarket? Have you noticed the magazines at the checkout counter? They're full of nasty stuff about famous people, celebrities, and these things are often true. How can celebrities stand it when their pictures, along with the nasty stories about them and their families, are in every supermarket in the country? And do you know who gets made fun of the most? The president. Newspapers, magazines, and TV shows are always criticizing him. How does the president handle it? The simple truth is that the more famous and powerful you are, the more people are going to want to make fun of you. So if other kids are spreading mean things about you, tell yourself they are giving you free publicity and helping you make yourself famous. Remember, when kids read mean things about you on the internet, it's not like they're reading it in a newspaper. They know that a lot of the nasty stuff is nonsense. So don't worry that they all believe it.
Something along those lines I heard recently is it said, the brighter that your light is, the more moths you attract.
Oh, I love that. How true is that? Well, the green-eyed monster is very sadly a part of everyone's life. And jealousy makes more enemies than any one other emotion, I believe. Even those of us who are kind-hearted and want to like everybody, we get jealous too and make bad decisions when we're consumed by jealousy. So it isn't a good thing by any stretch of the imagination. But I do want to say that I really want to stress that section about the internet, about being careful about who you answer, who you talk to, and absolutely positively never go meet somebody anywhere that you don't know. And if somebody calls you on the phone and you don't know who they are and they ask for any information about yourself, tell them if you think it's something that might be good, a good thing to do is say, let me call you right back. When you call right back, if nobody answers the number or it's a recording or something, it's probably some kind of a scam. So, be smart, everybody, because people are hungry, people are starving, people are doing all kinds of things to make money, and you don't want to be a part of anything like that. So everybody go out today and have a great day. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm not sure what we're going to talk about tomorrow. There's a lot of things going on in my life about health. So a few of those things might be some of the things that we talk about. But everybody go out and have a great day. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow. Thanks, Shel.
Thanks, Renee. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you in the morning.
Bye-bye.